Welcome to the Garden Show. My name's Kitty LaBounty, and I've got Molly Kabler in here in the studio driving away.
Good morning.
It's so nice to be here with you.
We are live in the studio. 747-5878 is the number to call.
Yes, indeedy. And we are happy to take your questions. So I noticed when I was coming across this morning, coming across the water and checking out the tops of the mountains, which I could actually see most of them, there was some new snow, both up on Bear Mountain, and it looked like back on the Sisters as well that I could see. So it is, is it May 4th or May 5th? I don't even remember anymore. It's so sad. But at any rate, it's still early in May. And so not to get too nervous about not having everything in the ground yet, not being, you know, totally going, because it's still kind of cool out.
It's warm, but that's the part. It's going to trick us. And we've already heard that there was someone who recently lost all of their plants that they were planning to use because of cold.
Oh, yeah. So you do need to be super careful. So I've been moving my plants out. I have got a lot of plants in the house, but I've been moving them out to the greenhouse and covering them up with row cover.
Hello, are you calling for the garden show?
Doesn't sound like it.
Okay, well, 747-5877. No, that's wrong. 5878 is the number we would love for you to call us on, and we will try and take your question live this morning during the garden show.
So a little bit more. I know we've talked about hardening off and moving things, your new starts out of the house and into the garden or into the greenhouse. You just want to be super cautious and super careful about it. The best thing to do is to move them during the day and then bring them in at night for a little while and to keep them covered up. So, and the row cover or newspaper, or you can, you know, do the milk carton, depends on how many individual plants you have. But I really recommend taking it slow. And making it, just making little steps and being super diligent about moving things around. Because, you know, it feels warmer, but it's not really. You know, it's right there in the 50s and dropping down, or just barely into the 50s and dropping down into the 30s many times at night. So, yeah, be cautious.
Speaking of moving things around, we wanted to take a quick moment to talk about rhubarb. Someone who had asked us a question about, well, I've grown my rhubarb forever and it's suddenly not very productive.
Yeah, so if your rhubarb, and this rhubarb had been in the same spot for a really long time, according to the story I heard, and the advice is if your rhubarb was really starting to lose productivity, that means you should have divided it a long time ago.
And fed it up. Hey, are you on the garden show with us?
Hello.
Woohoo. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm wondering if what kind of information you have about growing peppers, sweet peppers. I grow banana peppers and jalapenos and cayenne in greenhouses.
Yeah, that must be. I haven't grown a lot of those plants because I have smaller amount. I don't have a very big greenhouse, but I, you know, you're on the right track. If you've been growing, how many years have you been growing those plants?
They've been in the greenhouse for 18 years in the same place. I grow peppers and tomatoes, and the tomatoes have been in the same place, and I understand they're in the same family.
Yes.
For all that time.
So in the same bed. You've been growing them in a bed in your greenhouse.
Yes.
Okay. So are you starting to notice disease issues?
No.
Well, that's great then. So you're
What happens is my plants are gorgeous when I start them from seed, and right now they're about 14 inches high and beautiful, branching out. And as soon as I put them into the soil, they just quit growing.
Oh, have you checked the soil fertility?
Well, I use compost.
Well, compost is good for adding organic materials and some micronutrients, but it's not really that necessarily that good for adding nitrogen and phosphorus. So you might need to either add a higher nitrogen source to that. So maybe if you only want to use compost-type materials, maybe get some stronger manure. I guess there's rabbit manure in town or chicken manure. Herring and eggs is another thing we've recommended. It's a little past season for that, but it sounds like they plants, compost is great, but it doesn't usually have that super nitrogen and phosphorus boost that plants need.
Okay, well, I'll try that. And the other thing that I was wondering, I'm in Tanakee, and we have a horrible black slug problem here. And I was wondering, a neighbor uses this stuff called ortho snail and slug bait, and it's the main, active ingredient is 1% sulfur, and it says that it is safe for animals and pets. But I'm concerned about, is that, if I'm an organic farmer, and I wondered if that is a problem. I don't use it. I use mechanical means to eliminate them, but or keep them under control. Do you know anything about that?
I haven't used the slug and snail bait before either. I've used the sluggo, which is phosphorus, basically.
Right.
And so the phosphorus is nice. It breaks down and it adds some fertilizer. Sulfur on its own, in the quantities there that's probably going out in the bait, is probably not going to be a huge problem. And I certainly wouldn't feed it to my pets. And I would tend to use less of it, but, I don't use it at all. So everyone kind of gets to vote with their pocketbook.
It does seem to be working for him. The package does say that you should not use it in areas that drain off into drinking water.
Right, and that makes sense to me, too. Yeah, you don't want to add that sort of material to your drinking water. It depends. It's like if you're like an organic gardener and you want like organic certification through different programs, then you have to follow different rules and find out what those rules are and whether or not that's acceptable to them. Otherwise, you just have to judge for yourself whether or not you think it's acceptable based on the research.
Does not have organically.
Yeah.
I know that certificate symbol, and it's not on that.
Yeah, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. I'll definitely check into the next.
Thanks for the calling, and yeah, let us know how your peppers and tomatoes do if you add some more to them.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye. Yes, that is not an atypical thing. I mean, compost really is good, but it's mostly adding kind of micronutrients and microorganisms that are super useful in your soil, but they're not always super nutrient rich.
Hello, are you calling?
Hello, are you calling for the garden show?
Hello, this is Ken Buxton, animal control officer. I was just getting my truck to go patrol, and I heard something about the snail poison. I just picked up my phone. I was on speaker. I thought I had an echo. I just want to say that we should probably get one of the veterinarians to chime in on that. I know there was an issue a while back, and I'm very leery of that snail poison because of it. So I want to try and get one of the vets to maybe call in.
Well, great. And if they don't, I will give one of them a call and see if I can post something on Raven Radio's webpage. Because I know animals will get into all sorts of stuff they shouldn't. Fertilizers and all sorts of things like that. And, can certainly cause huge problems for them. I just didn't know anything specifically about that particular type of bait.
I know. And I heard that it says it's animal safe and maybe it isn't. I just want to get a vet to I'm going to try to call one and see if they can call you at this number.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye. Yeah, it is. I actually had someone tell me about they had to start hiding their fertilizer and materials from their dog because their dog thought that, there's a lot of meal in them. And so the dog thought that these sounded pretty good and was chewing them up like mad. So, yeah, be super careful. Pets and children don't know what they can eat or what they can't eat. And a lot of times things that are toxic taste fine. So you can't use your taste buds as a guide.
One of the other things I always like to think about is the beneficial insects and birds in my yard. And so maybe safe for cat and dogs. But is it safe for other organisms that are part of the balance of what's going on in my garden? So it's one of the many reasons Kitty and I both tend to be mostly organic in what we grow.
Yeah, and this is such an easy place to grow things for the most part. We don't have a lot so far, knock on wood. We haven't had a ton of insect pests. I mean, usually we have a few and they're pretty easy to control for with row covers or something like that. Aphids is another thing that we should address, actually, because aphids is another one that usually comes up as being an issue.
So right now we have aphids going on, and there's a couple reasons. One, it's been a very mild spring, and we don't have a lot of frost. We haven't had a lot of frost lately, which really knocks back those aphid populations. If you've overwintered any of your perennials or even annuals or plants that we normally grow as annuals, they may suddenly come into a really big bloom of aphids. I have a couple of violas that wintered over. They look great. I fertilized them up and they were doing great, and now they have a huge bloom of aphids. Aphids are pretty easy to control with some salt and water. A whole bucket of soapy water will work. A spray bottle with soap will knock them back. If you have a really bad case of aphids on something larger, like a rose hedge, later in the season we often get really heavy aphid infestation on roses, you can just use a sharp spray of water, and mm-hmm. that will knock it back at least enough to be tolerable.
Yeah, so water is your first course of action, you know, with some sort of force, and then a little bit of soapy water. Make sure, I try to use real soap, not detergent, and it doesn't take that much. I've also used some ultrafine oil, which is specifically for horticultural purposes. And I've done that when all my other things weren't really working. That's the way I went next. But it's an ultrafine oil, and it's sold specifically for that purpose. And it doesn't need to have any other chemicals in it, because the oil itself is going to smother them, basically, is the idea behind that. So I think we do have, like I said, a pretty darn benign climate for gardening, really. So two other questions that came up over time, and I can't remember if we hit all of these, but we just got a question about, is it too late to fertilize your rhododendrons for the year? And I would say certainly not.
Right. It's been kind of an amazing spring. There's a lot of our plants that are way ahead of schedule in terms of leafing out and blooming. And I think it has a lot of us a little panicked out, like we're way behind or, you know, things mm-hmm. are not as they should be. In a wonderful way, but also in that panicky right. way of, oh, maybe we've missed the boat. And you haven't.
I don't think you've missed the boat at all. So rhododendrons is an easy boat to jump on board right now. We were talking and it's like, realize that it's one of those tasks that's really easy to put off. But in general, it takes about 10 to 15 minutes to do all the rhododendrons in your yard, even if you have 10 or 12 of them. But it is, yeah, just get to it. It is a really good thing to give them. Whatever, you know, whatever you do, and Molly and I have said this a million times, but it's the one thing we use commercial fertilizer for, and also maybe one of the few things I actually follow the directions on, so you don't want to give them too much.
And by commercial, we mean commercial and formulated specifically for rhododendrons and azaleas. It can be hard to find it sometimes in commerce if they don't have exactly that. You can use holly.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much the same thing
right.
if it's called holly food. Evergreen food would be another fallback.
And I actually feed my hollies when I feed my rhododendrons, so they get a little boost too. That one thing that's been interesting for me this year, and the same thing happened last year, is that my domestic apples, and I have a few apple trees, and I've relied for a few years on them blooming at the same time as our wild crab apples, and they are now offset. So this is like the weirdest thing for me, is like they've always been blooming about the same time. So I could really rely on these crab apples that are around pretty much wild around my garden, providing some pollen for my domestic apples. And right now my domestic apples are blooming, all three of them, and my crabs are still in buds. They haven't quite opened yet. So I'm just like, ah. So I did get another crab apple to see if that might help the balance. I'm going to end up with an orchard out there pretty soon to try and get it. But it's that offset is the biggest seasonal difference I've really noticed, is that offset of blooming time.
So someone said to me, oh, I've left my my kale blooming because it's such a bee attractant, and I'm hoping that's going to help my apple trees.
Well, you know, if you're feeding your bees in other ways, it might. I mean, having more things blooming around your yard is not going to be a bad thing. I mean, even dandelions or whatever. But I know people who have, they've gotten to the point where they just have vegetables and they just have fruit trees, or they just have, you know, things that are very focused on food production. And they're realizing, whoa, there is nothing to keep my those bees in my garden at all. We're not feeding them and having them in the neighborhood. And then you're just hoping that they're going to come back at the right time. And they might. You know, if they're not too far away, they certainly might. But I kind of, that's part of the reasons why I've always had, I mean, let's be honest here. I've always had flowers because I really like flowers, but I like the combination. And those bees are making use of the whole suite of plants that are out there.
Hello, are you calling the garden show?
Hi, is this Molly?
It is.
Hi, Vicki.
Vicki, thank you for calling.
I'm actually at work, and I'm not listening to the show,
okay.
But someone asked me to call in about snail bait.
Yes.
And it was our animal control officer.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
Yes, and one of the callers asked if the slug and snail bait that's mostly sulfur, that I think it says on the package that it's safe for pets, they were wondering if it really was.
So there, a lot of the, quote, safe snail bait also contains iron, and that can be the toxic component. It's certainly much safer than metaldehyde,
mm-hmm.
but it's not totally safe. So
right.
If your pet gets into any snail bait, bring the box in with your pet.
Oh, great. Thank you. So is it probably more quantity? You know, it's like they
sure.
have a piece, it's not so bad. But, yeah, if
yep.
they get into the whole box, not so good.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and so with the iron-based snail bait, I'm sure they could eat significantly more before we saw toxicity.
Right, right. Well, good. That's thanks so much for calling in, Dr. Rosberg.
Oh, you're welcome.
Excellent. And we'll look forward to looking at your garden.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks for your call.
Bye.
Bye. Yes, that's very handy. I love living in a small town where people are really proactive about getting information out there. So I really appreciate both our animal control officer and Dr. Rosberg for giving us a call in. So yeah, watch your pets. If they eat quite a bit of it, basically keep them out of it if you possibly can, but you're not in control of their whole environment sometimes or their behavior. So just be careful.
And a great tip from our local veterinarian, if you do have a problem, bring the packaging in so they know exactly what the issue is or might be.
So one other quick question that came up, and it's been on my mind, and I may have mentioned it a couple of times, was how can you tell if your plants are low in nitrogen or if they're low in iron? So, and this comes up because our soils are cold right now. There's, you know, especially outdoors, they're kind of cool and plants are kind of struggling a little bit. You know, they're trying to get going and trying to get stuff out of our lovely soil, but it's a little bit problematic at times, usually because of pH and because of cold. But if it's nitrogen, the leaves will be kind of uniformly yellow. And if it's iron, they will be yellow, but the veins will be bright green. So iron deficiencies are less common, typically, in most plants, but they do occur. So you want to always make sure there's actually super good references with color pictures for leaves and what sort of issues they're having in terms of, you know, nutrient loss. So it's always good to actually do the diagnosis and then add the right stuff and, you know, just be careful about it. And, you know, again, add quantities in sensible amounts.
And recognize that it takes a time for the plant to take that up and change the look of the plant.
Yes, unless you feed it. I mean, you can get a little faster result if you feed it like some of those liquid fertilizers, but for the most part, you have to be patient. So for the garden show, thanks so much for joining us. My name's Kitty LaBounty.
I'm Molly Kabler, and good luck in your garden. Hope for sun.